Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Joe Branton.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
Hiya.
Did it in a different order.
Why? Why would you do that?
I don't know. I sort of looked over there at Matt, who's coming to us via the internet. Then I looked left and saw you, unfortunately. And then Jay is at the end.
But we've always sat this way.
I know. I don't know why. You know,
it's new 2016 year, new start. Shake-up.
Yeah. I've had a cabinet reshuffle. How is everyone? How was your Christmas and stuff?
Yeah, it was great. How was yours? Yeah.
Good. Yeah, very good. Family and that. Saw all the nieces, or the niece, as it were. Yeah, it was all right. Nice to have a little break from work. That was
how
good.
How long did you have?
I'm still not back.
Still on holiday.
I'm still not back.
Still on holiday.
At the time of this recording, I'm back on the 11th of January. So
you got 3 weeks off or something ridiculous. When was your last day? Christmas Eve.
So like 2.5 weeks.
But we finished early and went to the pub.
Yeah.
I got 4 days.
Sweet.
Yeah, 4 days.
The joys of shop floor retail.
Yeah.
But I bet it's good in there. I mean, I bet it's busy, but has it been much of a Christmassy vibe?
It's amazing how many people wait till after Christmas
to buy a big thing.
To buy things, because it's almost like it's getting late. In the last sort of 10 years I've been doing it, it's been getting later and later. And now to the point where people are actually physically not buying anything before Christmas.
It's gone post-Christmas rush rather than pre-Christmas.
Yeah, so you got Black Friday, which was really busy, and then it kind of like really, really quiet, and then like really busy post-Christmas.
Do you think that's because people are buying their Christmas presents on Black Friday and then they're getting money and stuff for Christmas,
so they spend after? And it's funny though, because then I always think with that, then like NAMM is like, what, 3 weeks away?
Yeah.
2 weeks away? And like there's going to be so much new stuff. I just think it's almost worth waiting like another month and then getting deposits down on stuff that's inevitably going to be new.
It started already. I've had press releases and everything.
Is this Matty trying to put forward a case for why his shop should be closed for like a whole week after Christmas? Because like, well, listen, there's no point before
Christmas, that's what he's saying.
Well, but also after. It's like, well, there's no point in buying anything after Christmas because NAMM's... let's just close.
Who would buy a new thing before the new releases for the new year?
I mean, maybe it's people buying an old thing.
Yeah, it's people buying old things. So it's people buying the NAMM releases from January in late December.
The problem is, unlike kind of a lot of media and stuff that's released at NAMM, a lot of times doesn't even come out in the same year. Yeah, you know, it still is like it's a trade show. You know, it's not, in theory, it's not consumer facing. You know, it's buyers are going there to work out, okay, right, these companies got these products coming out over the next 12 months. This is what we should be looking out for. But it's kind of become like a guitar convention, I guess.
Yeah.
Talking of products like that, I'm pretty sure there's some shops in America that have got that T-Rex replicator tape echo.
They're in the UK.
We've really got one.
I haven't seen one yet.
I've seen one. I've seen one in the flesh.
What's the?
I went down into the warehouse. It was when it was delivered. I took it out of the box. I took a photo. I thought I put it on the group. Maybe I didn't put it on the group. I put it on my Instagram.
I went into Joe's shop to have a go on it, and they hadn't got it in for me.
Hey, so, yes. Can we play? It comes in this this really nice little leather holdall. It's It's like the sort of thing that I imagine, you know, like George Clooney keeps his toiletries in.
His Nespresso machine.
Yeah, yeah, but it's, you know, just like this little brown leather thing with a furry interior, and then you've got your ridiculously expensive pedal. But
is it giggable? Do you think it's like worthy enough to be giggable?
Does it
like sit on a pedal board?
No, well, I mean, I don't know, man. Would you risk it? £600. Would you put it on a pedal board?
It looks sturdy, though. It looks well sturdy.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. It does look really sturdy.
You're just thinking about the monetary value. But then at the same time, you know, how much are things like H9s and, you know, high-end process and things?
An excellent point. But I'm almost thinking that is there any point bringing a £600 tape echo when, you know, unless the venue's going to be absolutely tip top, unless PA is going to be.
I don't think they're aiming it at, like, you know, Bobby Bob Jobs who's playing down the Queen's Arms.
But even like even if we go to medium sized venues, if we look at like the Brixton Academies and places like that, I don't think that would be like, I mean, sort of in comparison to like stadium sort of thing. But I'm not even sure that it would be worth it for those. Do you think it'd be worth it for those?
I think it completely depends what you're doing. I mean, if your sound revolves entirely around that sort of analog tape sound,
which Strymon already do very well.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, it's more like it doesn't matter what it does to everyone that's hearing you. It doesn't matter what you're using,
yeah,
but to you,
it
it's all about what you're playing through, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, I guess so.
I think it's probably going to be more of a home or studio.
It's kind of the debate we have on all these things, really, isn't it? And it's like, where are they actually pitching this? To be honest, a lot of the pedal market is just people that play at home. So make it as kind of expensive and like unwieldy as it needs to be, because it's probably the majority of people buying one are not going to gig it.
And also, it's, you know, who's buying something like that? Probably someone who uses an RE201.
Yeah.
Or similar. Yeah. And it's certainly going to be more durable than
someone who never goes out and gigs.
Well, not necessarily, but you know, that's the sort of person who's probably going to buy a replicator. You know,
so when are you getting yours, Matt?
I don't know. I was saying before this podcast, I haven't played guitar pretty much all over Christmas, and apart from waiting for my new guitar to turn up, I'm kind of like a bit like maxed out. I'm just like, I don't really know what I want or anything. I'm kind of a bit like,
I don't think we've spoken about it.
No, it's been spoken about on the group, but we should definitely talk about your new guitar.
Yeah, I haven't actually got it yet, so maybe I should wait until I've actually got it.
No, say it now so that it builds hype.
Well, okay, right. So I walked into a shop and they had the Les Paul that I spec'd in Nashville hanging on the wall. So
this is the guitar that you actually spec'd yourself when you were in Nashville.
It was one of the guitars I spec'd when I was in Nashville, and the guy obviously decided that it was a good. The guy who runs the European custom or the European side of the custom shop basically has very similar tasting guitars as me, and obviously decided to order it. So I went in looking for one thing that I thought I'd never find, and then found the one thing that I thought I'd never see. So
what were you looking for? Your Esquire?
I was looking for a one pickup Les Paul custom on the complete off chance that they might have one, and I ended up putting a deposit down on a 58 Les Paul in ocean pink.
I mean, it's the best, it's genuinely the best spec custom shop 58 Les Paul in the best colour that Gibson ever do, which is ocean. I prefer solid colours. I'm not really into figured top or like flame top or bird's eye top or anything. I think plain top look better, and that pink is amazing.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I was like, it's the LPR spec, so it's got the vintage correct neck tenon as well, which to be honest doesn't really make much difference to like the overall sound, but it's obviously a more vintage correct spec. And yeah, it came about because a friend basically posted up a link to the Music Zoo in New York, which like a massive Gibson custom shop dealer had a second, well, had two secondhand one pickup Les Pauls, a one pickup Les Paul custom in Silverburst and a one pickup 58 in T-Burst. And I was like, I mean, it was such a good price. I was like, I'm really, really tempted, but it was going to cost £600 to import it. And I was like,
it's always the stinger.
Yeah, and then there's like, you know, I know that I've ordered stuff from America before and from various companies, and they've kind of just marked it as like warranty repair. Like, you've not even asked, they've just gone, oh, we'll mark it as, you know, but it's only like £100 pedal. Whereas it's like £600 guitar, you don't want to mark the value down because if it gets damaged, you're never going to be able to claim the value back on the insurance.
Yeah. Not a £600 guitar.
No.
You said no. Yeah, okay.
£600 for VAT was just like, You could arrange your own collection, but once again, it's just like, it's expensive. So it's kind of a bit too much of a risk. And I just walked into the shop thinking, they're a pretty big custom shop dealer in the UK. I think they're actually one of the biggest. And I was like, do you have one? They were like, no. And then I turned around and they had this pink Les Paul. And I was like, when did you get that? And they were like, oh, like a few months ago. And I was like, oh, I wonder. And lo and behold, it was basically what I asked for.
So what did you have to sell?
Christmas came early.
Oh,
yeah, I know. I already know. So what did you sell?
Well, I haven't actually, that's the reason I haven't actually got it yet, because I put up for commission my SG, because to be honest, I hadn't played it. I bought it and I just hadn't played it. And I think it's the same thing I have with everything vintage I ever buy, to be honest, unless it's a 59 Les Paul, I just don't think it's as good as anything that you can get new, almost. I think there's a cool vibe about some vintage stuff, but to be honest, is it as playable? Is it as nice? I don't know. Everything I've owned that's ever been as old, I've kind of never really been as attached to.
So you think the new Les Paul might be the only new bit of kit on the horizon?
Yeah. To be honest, there isn't anything else.
He said that often.
Oh, of course.
He said that with the SG, he said that with the Esquire.
Yeah.
With the 70s telly.
Oh, it's the constant turnover.
Yeah. I just can't think of anything else that... That's out there at the moment that I kind of really want. Stuff always pops up, but it's like, you know.
As you said earlier, Matt, NAMM is 2 or 3 weeks away, so there definitely will be new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of press releases probably came out today, so there's probably going to be a lot more over the next couple of weeks as well, because people tend to announce everything early now. So you kind of know exactly what's coming out at NAMM, so.
Yeah.
To have to keep an eye on things, but I don't know. I'm kind of also, because I'm still in the middle of buying a house, which is taking up the majority of my money. Trying not to think about buying anything is probably a good thing.
Yeah, I'm in the same situation. I keep seeing loads of like new cool stuff, and I'm like, no, I'm supposed to be saving. So,
kind of why I'm glad I got a PlayStation, because now I can just sit and play computer games and not actually have to look at the internet or guitars.
But the thing is, you're surrounded by them all day, so you will.
Something will.
Did anyone get anything guitar related for Christmas this year?
J. Cross?
No. Joe Branton?
No.
I actually did.
Whoa!
I got the, it's nothing super exciting. I got the Groon Guitars book. Have you seen that, Matt? It's over there. I can't forget what it's called now. Complete History of Electric Guitar or something like that.
Oh, I saw it. It had like a 62 jazz bass on the front.
It's got...
a little bit of one.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a bit of a jazz on the front. It's really cool. I'd highly recommend it. So it's co-authored by the guy that runs Groon Guitars. And it's loads and loads of wicked pictures of wicked, like, vintage guitars, and talks you through the history right through from the kind of... Rickenbacker frying pan lap steel right up to more modern, you know, stuff with Floyds and things like that. So yeah, cool. super cool. It's given me some new video ideas and things we can talk about on the podcast and stuff like that. So
there's nothing like lifting your information from someone else.
Well, you know, just taking inspiration from it. So yeah, all good. Should we do some
news, man?
Good. First up, and this has been in the kind of, there's been a bit of a barrage of new information over the last couple of days, people gearing up for NAMM, as we've been talking about. First up, brand new ESP guitars. There's a whole range. There's so many new models.
Are there?
It's ridiculous. I was just clicking the link that you you sent us pre-podcast, and I was like, that's a lot of guitar to
there's,
take in.
There's got to be... There's probably 80 guitars there, something like that, would we say?
Yeah, at least.
So, I mean, it's just... Have you guys had a chance to have you had a chance to look through it yet?
Yeah.
Does anything stand out to you? Because the thing that kind of caught my eye were the snappers, which are the kind of ESP sort of high end Strat style, which also carries down to the SN range, which are the more affordable, the LTDs. But there's some new signatures in there as well. Jay, have you got the list
I've
there?
I've got the list open here, yeah.
What do you think to the snapper?
The snapper, they look... do you know how much they're going to be?
There's a range. So the snappers are ESP on the headstock, so they're going to be quite expensive. But they also do the SN range as well, which are LTDs.
The only thing... my only problem with... And this is just sort of going off a first glance. My only slight problem is they do kind of just look like Pacificas.
Sure.
You know, and essentially, if it says ESP on there, they're going to be probably 800 quid, but like the cheapest.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot of money to be paying for something that, you know, I mean, you could buy an American Strat for that money.
You could, but they are offering something different. Obviously, neck profile's different. There's going to be humbucker in the bridge.
Yep.
Slightly kind of more modern body shape. If you want something that's kind of not your granddad's Strat, then...
Yes, yeah, of course. There's the flame and figure top on there.
Yeah,
and
they
stuff.
Do like some natural woods that look amazing. Like that second one in there with the maple neck. Yeah,
which the AS burner. The AS burner.
I think they're doing one with Fishman Fluence pickups as well.
Okay.
As standard. Which are probably going to be the only production guitar with them in. But I kind of like them. They're sort of like, I suppose, someone who maybe wants like a Sur or something like that, but like a cheaper alternative.
Yeah.
Because they're about I think they're just shy of 850 quid.
Okay.
On the LTD range. I don't know how much the ESP range actually is.
I think this, all the 2016 stuff seems to be the first time ESP have taken the rather inappropriately named Stream. Body
that,
shape.
That is that they are awesome.
I really like them.
Really into them. They remind me of those old those Yamahas with the one massive horn. Remember the really futuristic.
Oh yes.
SBX. Yes. So they look really cool. They did put out a couple of basses last year in it. I don't actually know if they put out guitars, but it looks like they're
ESP.
Doing,
yeah. Every
they
year
did streams.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, no, they do guitars every year.
Well, I thought you were saying that. Like, did they release any new guitars?
Any new guitars in the any guitars in the Stream body shape? It was.
I don't think so because that's
a
the
bass
one,
shape.
That's the one in all the new marketing. That's the one that they're pushing. Yeah. So I wonder whether they've kind of copied that over. I think it looks cool. It's
the Stream guitars
look Firebird.
Great. I'm not into the headstock.
No, the
all.
Headstock's the best bit. I really like the headstock, but they've released a couple more basses. They've added a 5-string option to it, and it's kind of got a traditional feel to it because it's just by virtue of having a scratch plate and them doing it in like tobacco sunburst style things. But they've introduced a couple of more modern looking versions that have that sort of layered carved top.
They look super cool.
They look great. If you want like something that's a bit different and super modern, then I think those which is the Stream the 1004 and 05 series, catchy named.
There's also LTD versions available, isn't there?
Yes, there are. Those ones are specifically, I mean, those are the kind of the carved top style ones. Yeah, they do like that. They've got a current series of 204 and 205 Streams at the moment, and it looks like they've added
some more high-end stuff
some
ESP
more
and E2.
Yeah, exactly.
Those as well. These ones look a bit like a P-Bass.
Yeah, basses are interesting this year. They've introduced another new model called the AP, which was basically them going, hey, you know what was really unpopular that definitely didn't work for Yamaha when they brought it back? The BB. So let's make BBs. I mean, I don't know why they've done this. This is almost guaranteed not to take off, but... the new AP series, which looks... it does look a bit like a P-Bass. It's somewhere in between Precision and Yamaha BB.
The difference is that they will probably actually push those quite heavily, and they've got a big range of artists, and there'll be some sort of signature model version at some point, which
That's
is
right.
not something that Yamaha really do, apart from Billy Sheehan, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
They could have some legs.
They've also got that fan fret...
Yeah, they've
B1004SE.
That's right. They've followed Ibanez straight into the sort of fan fret production line. I think that looks really good. Like, if
it looks interesting.
Yeah, it's not my cup of tea, but I mean, it's. I think it looks cracking. I mean, the wood finish, the sort of swirly.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is actually. Koa?
Some sort of Koa. Yeah.
I don't think it won't be. It won't be Koa.
Maybe. But, I think it looks cracking. I really like those angled pickups, angled that way. I think that looks super cool. And lastly, they've introduced the that Tower of Power bass player. We spoke about him ages ago.
Yeah, I've forgotten his name. They're finally doing an LTD version of that, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. They're doing an affordable version of that. Still with a through. Oh, no, it's not a through neck on this one, is it?
No, they're bolt. But what it does retain is that weird jazz bass pickup right next to the bridge for the most toppy
angled,
sound.
Angled, but angled on the low string side towards the bridge.
The wrong way around, basically.
Your low E is going to be just treble. And then they've got... But to counter that, they've put an active Aguila P bass pickup right in the neck.
Yeah.
But even that's reversed as well, so you've got the...
Yeah, it's very, very weird setup. These are all available to check out.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I've played one of those basses. They're very, very odd.
I was just having a look at the Michael Wilton signature, obviously they've gone, "What do you want?" And he's gone, "Well, you know my band logo." And they're like, yeah. They're like, "Can you put it on every fret? And then can you put a massive one on the body? And then can the body print be also my logo multiplied several times?"
I did notice that. All these are available for viewing over at espguitars.com, by the way. There's a kind of new models section. But yeah, that Michael Wilton one is absolutely hilarious. It's like, "Yeah, I really, really like my band logo. So just put it..."
I drew it, don't you know?
"Just put it on every conceivable surface possible."
They've done a seven-string telly as well.
Yeah, I saw
which
those.
Which I reckon... will be really,
I really like
popular.
Those. I like tellies when they're done in a metal style.
I don't know if they've done an LTD seven string telly, have they?
What's his name? The Stephen Carpenter. Has had like a set. He's got an eight string baritone and the seven string.
Yeah.
And normal eight string, I think.
But they were ESP, they weren't LTD, were they?
No, they were LCD.
Oh,
were they? I don't think they were super expensive.
I think it's just that the line has had a bit of a revamp because they've got like burled maple tops and things like that on there now.
So. It's still.
These seven strings just white, actually.
Oh, sorry, the ones next to it.
Yeah, the 401.
They're kind of more metalised tellies.
They've introduced more tellies in their other series, though, as well, some slightly more traditional-looking ones that look great as well. But actually, quickly, back to that fan-fretted bass, I just read the specs on it, and it's the same Nordstrand humbuckers that are in the Ibanez version of this.
Really?
And actually, they've also gone for a Hipshot mono bridge,
Which is when
you have the individual bridge pieces.
Individual saddles,
yeah.
So Ibanez use that as well.
Yeah, so this is absolutely... And it's Bubinga, the top, which is, again, like a really common Ibanez.
Yep.
Yeah, this is basically an Ibanez.
Did you ever get around to playing those Ibanez with the fan frets?
Yeah, I did. I had a little go.
What's the verdict?
Well, you don't really notice it, which is good, because it means it's, you know, I guess the intonation or...
Yeah,
whatever is improved. It's just you know, it's fixing a problem that doesn't need to be fixed for me.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, whatever. It makes you look cooler, I guess. It makes you look like you're doing something harder than what you're actually doing.
It would make you look like you know what you're doing.
Yes. No. Nothing will ever
don't me. So alongside those, there's also some new Ibanez models this year. There is. Not everything's been announced yet. There's some that have been 100% confirmed and some stuff that's kind of being rumoured.
Yeah.
And Ibanez have released the worst looking guitar I have ever seen.
What's that?
It's actually a reissue and it's their... they introduced the sort of basses in a similar shape
last
year.
Not the Tau Man?
Yes.
What?
Dude,
what's wrong with you?
That looks awful.
That
it's got white strap.
And the jack plug.
Yeah, what's that? It's got white strap. Volume and tone controls on like this horrible white scratch plate.
I like the Talman, I think it's
good.
But
then the tone control is on the bridge plate.
Yeah?
No.
I really like the
jack plate. Actually, I must admit, I'm surprised they're not more popular because you're seeing loads of people in America.
It looks like a Tanglewood.
There's loads of people in America playing Telemasters, which is that weird custom body that Warmoth offer, which is like the half Jag Jaguar Jazzmaster half telly.
Yeah.
Which basically that's what it looks like. And there's loads of people on there online who are playing them. And I'm like, I'm surprised not more people are going, actually, I could just buy this Ibanez that looks exactly the same.
And it's going to be like probably 400 quid and is pretty cool. Joe Branton's definitely wrong about this.
Awful. I like they're using the old Ibanez logo on the headstock.
Yeah, I think it's super cool looking. I think it looks really nice. If it comes in a
torque garb, maybe.
Well, any colour other than Sunburst, I think, would be a massive improvement, because I think the Sunburst, it's hard to do a Sunburst on a guitar at that price because they can end up looking a bit cheap. But a couple of new acoustics as well.
Fan fret acoustic.
What's the model number on that, Jay?
The GB10 SE. It's a Benson.
What is even the point in this?
The Ibanez is the ALFF10NT.
Oh, I think there's
no. The AF is the jazz body.
Yeah, the AF is a jazz body. Yeah. Oh no, the GB is the jazz body. Sorry.
The Benson
is the jazz body. Yeah. Sorry, this is where I'm looking has been laid out really badly. Yeah, the AEL. Sorry. AEL FF10 NT.
I think fan frets are going to be the new eight string.
Really?
Just like Dumble's going to be the new Klon. I think it's all shifting for 2016. We're going to see fan frets everywhere.
I'm kind of down with it. I think it's funny. I mean, it's not something that I would ever need.
That's exactly what it is. It's funny.
But that's what but so are seven strings and eight strings. That's why people buy them. So, and another left-handed bass, I think, are the models that have kind of been announced.
Yeah, sorry,
so far.
And there's also a new GB10.
There's also a new Talman acoustic, and bizarrely enough, like, I know that they look a bit weird, they're actually one of the best-selling acoustics.
Yeah.
Like, because they're a thin body, they're quite lightweight, they're nice acoustically, but they sound great plugged in.
For people who don't care what they look like.
They've kind of taken over a bit of that market of Yamaha APX, like that thin body, small, designed for stage, decent preamp, acoustic for £200 to £300.
Talking of Yamaha, I don't know, did we podcast?
We've not talked about the Revstars.
Yeah, we've not talked about the Revstars.
Haven't we?
So, for those who don't know, in between times of us podcasting, pre-Christmas and now, Yamaha released a whole line of new guitars called the Revstar. Are they based on an existing model?
It's a completely new thing, but it's very, very similar to the Yamaha SGs.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? For ages, everyone's been going, well, I know I certainly haven't, I think Jay was the same, going, can you just hurry up and make a cheaper Yamaha SG, because they're awesome guitars, but they're, you know, £2,000. And then I saw these and was like, that looks like a cheaper Yamaha SG. And they do a range of awesome models with loads of different pickups and loads of different finishes.
Great
and different
colours, interesting tailpieces and Bigsby's and P90s and Humbuckers.
But they just sort of appeared from nowhere. And I don't think that many people have made like a massive shout about them. Really?
Oh,
the colours on the top end model look amazing. They're called like Retro Rust or something like
that. There's Rusty Rat.
Okay, that's not quite as cool as I remember it sounding, but
there's Rusty Rat, which is like, it looks like a Pelham Blue type colour, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a matte Pelham Blue.
Steel Rust.
Okay, that's what I was thinking of.
And Ash Grey.
They all look really
good.
There's
also colours like, what's this one called? Wool Fade. And I think there's also one called like Brick Wall or
brick
something
burst.
Like that.
Brick Burst.
That's the German variety.
Brick Burst is a very odd colour name.
Brick Burst.
But the weird thing is that some colours only come out, like each series has its own set of colours.
And
also like own inlays on the board. I think it's got to be one of the most substantial selections you can get from a single instrument.
That cheap stock yellow looks great.
Looks amazing. And the whole neck is yellow.
Is it?
The back of the neck is yellow.
Are they bolt neck?
They're not going to be glue, are they? Nothing's bolt.
Surely they're bolt.
I'm sure nothing's bolt.
Really? Wow.
Jay Cost confirmed.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure. They also, some of them have Bigsby's as well, which is quite cool. Bigsby's in like the big toaster style Gretsch pickups.
That cheap one, the one that retails at 349 or whatever it was.
299, isn't it?
No, I think they're 389.
What is going on with this website?
In TV Yellow, they look absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they are great. Josh did a really good video of like all of them, playing every single one. And they are really, really cool.
Oh, yeah, 289.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's it. I can't believe you guys didn't notice, but like, I'm super excited about this. The shop I work at are doing like a day for them.
Oh, really? When's that?
With everyone. Oh, I've got to book it.
Oh, okay. But we're going to do a day. I've actually got to do some work.
Yeah, I've still got
to. I'd like to come to that.
But we're going
to
have like all of them there and stuff. Is it going to be really great?
A weekday?
I don't know, man.
Can you make it a weekend?
I can do a weekend. Yeah, I was probably going to do a weekend.
Yeah, that'd be good. I want to come to that.
I'm glad we're working this around.
Can we make sure Hawks aren't playing that day?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So what's the... Because at 820, I thought was the most expensive range.
Yeah,
what's
I think that's about
RSP20CR? I think it looks like the range above the 820.
Oh, I've not got... I'm on a...
I don't think we've got the deets of that. Looking up
looks like this.
On the interwebs for us, Matty. While you do that, should we dive into a bit more news? Keeley Pedals have just announced the Gold Star Reverb. Have you had a chance to listen to this yet, Matt? Because I listened to it today and it sounds unbelievable.
Tough market at the moment, though. Reverbs.
There's a lot out there, but honestly, trust me, this pedal sounds... It doesn't sound like a regular reverb. It's got some very, very unique things about it.
Is it all like the shimmer thing in the
room? No, not at all. It's like totally the other way. It's like...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Dirty sounding.
Oh, yeah?
It's really like absolutely smashing it out of the park at the moment. I mean, they're releasing like 12 new pedals or something like that. I think they did loads last year. It's almost too much to keep up with.
Yeah. Someone pointed out on the Facebook group earlier, just before we started doing this, that Earthquaker Devices have basically scrapped most of their lineup.
Yeah.
And are now releasing like 15 new pedals at NAMM, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I think we knew that. I think
I didn't know that. Oh, okay. I only found out today. But
So potentially we've missed our opportunity to get a Rainbow Machine.
No, Rainbow Machine, I think, is still current.
To disc on that.
I've only seen like a graphic of the new pedals, and it had like all the old pedals were in there, and then there was like the bigger was the new ones, and I'm pretty sure Rainbow Machine was still in there. So yeah. So have you had a chance to listen to the Gold Star, Matt?
I haven't, to be honest, because I didn't even know they'd, like I said, they're doing so many pedals. I physically can't keep up with what's coming out, because I think they had the 30-second multi-tracker, which came out like a few months ago. And before that, it was the Dynatrem. And then all of a sudden, I think they've got a Viboverb, the Abbey Road Chamber Echo.
Yeah.
And they've also got the Memphis Sun, which is the lo-fi reverb and double tracker.
So a deco, basically.
Yeah, basically a cheaper deco. And then the multi-echo as well, which is a bit like a... an Echoplex.
Okay. Well, so the Gold Star Reverb, as far as I can remember, has got three modes on it. It's got what they call like a dirt mode or a drive mode.
There's a distortion. I just had a look at it. Distortion, compressed, and
flanged, I think is
flanged,
the last one.
Yeah. Is the other mode.
So the distortion mode sounds like someone's just like overdriven a kind of reverb tank. It's like really dirty.
That sounds awesome.
Kind of really horrible sounding, but also like in the best way. The compressed one, I think, is based on like some famous classic reverb. And then the flanged is, as it sounds, a flange reverb. But it sounded way better than any other flange reverb I think I've ever heard. Again, great video demos like on their site. The flange reverb, which takes up most of the demo, just sounds otherworldly. It sounds awesome.
Because it was when they did the double tracker, and I was like, oh god, this pedal seems a bit rubbish. Like just a double tracker, 30 milliseconds, and I actually had a go on one. And was like, actually, this thing sounds amazing.
Yeah,
and they've kind of got like reverb like down to a T. Like all the reverb stuff that seems to be coming out seems to be like amazing, and not just like, oh, let's just make an ambient reverb and add an octave up. They're actually making reverbs that like people want to hear. You know that. Someone's going to use on a pedal board, or maybe just even in the studio.
Yeah, it's very much that. And I think what they've done with the Gold Star is like there's three sounds in there that you wouldn't necessarily get on any of their other reverbs. And it kind of, you know, if maybe if you've already got like the Abbey Road one for a more traditional verb, you could kind of tag this on and it will give you like three kind of weirder sounds, but without you having to buy, you know, something like a Big Sky, which is just loads and loads of stuff you probably wouldn't end up using.
Yeah.
Do you know how much this is hitting the shelves at?
Any idea, Matt?
I don't at the moment. It's on the American website at $179.
Okay.
So it's probably going to be $149.
Yeah,
probably
$149.
I'd have thought.
When's it getting launched? Is this a
NAMM
launch?
They announced it this week, so who knows, basically.
Right. I was just...
probably
sounds like something I would definitely purchase.
With these kind of more popular boutique companies, it tends to be that they announce it and it's available almost straight away.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. They seem to have the launches down quite well, I think.
Definitely.
Keeley and Earthquaker and that, I think they're pretty good.
They've got 15 different reverbs on their website. Well, a delay and echo is 15, and that incorporates some reverbs. And one of them is like the Jimmy Hazel signature echo phase. And it's like a tape echo, but it's also got a phaser built into it as well.
Nice.
It's quite cool. Yeah, they've got some cool stuff. That I mean, like I said, they've got... I'm just on the website now, and I'm like, I haven't... Like, the place where I work is like a Keeley stockist, and like some of this stuff, I'm like, I haven't even seen or heard of this stuff. I think they're just like making pedals, and then like all of a sudden, they just like appear. They seem to be... What else is new that I haven't seen? The Charing Cross All-Germanian Overdrive Octave Fuzz, the DS9, which basically looks like a Tube Screamer.
Quite nice.
Are they allowed to do that? Star Trek DS9?
Yeah.
Are they
allowed to take kind of parts of two really famous pedals and just like mash the name together?
Yeah, I'm assuming so. Why not?
Yeah, you know.
Police.
Talking of brand new pedals, another release this week, the Alexander pedals, Jubilee Overdrive and Calavera Phaser. Matt, we talked about the Jubilee Overdrive in the group, didn't we?
It's
basically a Marshall Silver Jubilee in a box.
Yeah, it looks awesome. And there's a nice little touch of the LED is like a miniature version of the on-off switch from the, you know, when you get the Marshalls with the black on-off switch and then the see-through red standby switch.
Yes.
It's like the same material. It looks really class.
Nice.
And the great thing about these guys, these are the same people that make the Disaster Area Designs like MIDI switches and all the MIDI stuff. And like I know they've done a couple of they've only been going I think since like early last year. I think they've been like designing stuff for ages, but they've only kind of like launched within the last sort of eight months or so. But all the stuff I've heard has been really, really good.
Yeah, it seems that they've got some, they're bringing out a lot of new products and it's all been really well received. Like this Jubilee, I mean, it is just basically that kind of slash tone in a box basically.
Yeah.
And the Calavera Phaser, again, a bit like the Gold Star Reverb, really, in that it's kind of got three sounds packed in there and just offering just loads of different tones, basically. Again, with something like a phaser, you don't normally get a variety on there, I guess. It will usually just be more or less and rate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's nice. I mean, I was looking at their flanger for ages because it actually sounds like a for me, like flange is almost like a really unusable effect. But their one's, you know, it's got a couple of cool modes on. It's got like a really nice dynamic mode on it. And they do a really good tremolo that sounds like an amp tremolo. So it's a bit like a cheaper version of a Strymon Flint, but sounds like equally as good.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool little company to kind of keep an eye on, basically. They could be up there with, like you say, Strymon and Wampler and people like that.
Yeah, I hope so.
Definitely. And one last bit of news this week. People have probably heard it already because we're kind of a few days behind the news coming out. Unfortunately, Lemmy passed away this week. Boxing Day, I believe.
Yeah.
Joe Branton, obviously big man in the bass world. Lemmy, not you.
No.
what are your thoughts on Lemmy as a bass player and that sort of tone?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's very different from anything I go for, but yeah, I mean, Lemmy was absolutely a bass player who gave who defined an awful lot, and I think he changed how bass playing could be perceived, and how heavy you could play. And there's a great little video. I don't know what the video was made for about him talking about how he gets his tone.
Yeah,
and he's in front of his rig, his ridiculous like 2/4/15s,
yeah,
or whatever they are, and it's a massive Marshall head in between them with his ridiculous carved Rickenbacker.
Yeah,
and he says he's like, well, it's easier to explain it like this, and he plays his bass, and he's like, most bass players play like this, and he plays with his fingers, and he's like, bum 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 bum. And then he's like, and I play like this, and then just turns around to his amp, pulls his hand across every dial, and then just starts playing chords on it, and like then continues to play this piece. It was basically 12 bar, but he was doing like the rhythm and a little bit of lead as well at the same time, just by sort of a couple of like simple open note bar chordy style things. But it was great, and I think that's kind of what was the thing about Lemmy, is that he wasn't the most complicated bass player in the world, but actually he did a sketch. He was in a comedy sketch, and I'm not going to talk about the infamous performance on The Young Ones, but he did another sketch. I can't remember the show. It had do you know the one I'm talking about?
I do know the one you're talking about. It's I can't remember, but yes, it starts off with a fella playing
guitar, but
it's
been doing the rounds on YouTube.
Yeah.
I've seen a few times, so definitely worth watching. It's about a fella who's learning to play guitar and finding it very difficult, and him and his son work out a way, coming up with a plan for how they could possibly sue the guy who wrote the book for it not being... This is very long-winded. The gist of it is they imagine a court case where they have loads of famous players coming in to sort of prove a point.
Okay.
And they have loads of famous guitarists and bass players in there. They have like Eric Clapton's in there and Mark King's in there and Lemmy and like loads of people and Dave Gilmour. And at the end, they have them all jamming together and basically all you can hear is Lemmy. Which is
just
why it's
of
so
sheer
good.
Volume.
Yeah, just because of sheer volume. But to be honest, he sounded way better than Mark King.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I would say that's 100% true 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. Sad news. Lemmy and that.
He only found out about having the big C a few days earlier.
Yeah. Got a couple of days.
He's been ill for a while though, hasn't he? Like, yeah, the cancelled tours and things like that.
Yeah, but the cancer just jumped on him and just... Like, it was very, very aggressive.
I can't imagine that his immune system was in particularly good shape after 50 years of boozing heavily every day.
Yeah.
Actually, one of our podcast listeners, a chap called JD Short, who lives in LA, in America, he used to work for Rickenbacker and he used to carve Lemmy's bass.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
What a job.
Yeah.
Sounds
exactly.
Right,
his profile picture is
did he have
much,
more than one though, or was that just did he have the only one?
It was a range, wasn't it?
They actually made them. Yeah,
I remember there
did
was
them
a signature
series. Yeah.
They were about $5,000 or something, weren't they? They were really expensive.
Sure they were. I mean, if they were hand carved, JD.
That's why they can't make them any quicker. Oh, what do you mean you've got an 18-month waiting list? Oh, we've got to carve another Lemmy base that takes at least a year.
Yeah, it's bit of a hold up, bit of carving to be done. Should we dive into some questions?
Yeah.
Questions.
What's so funny about a bit of carving to be done?
I don't know. It's just the way that you were like so desperate to move
Jay's
on.
Imagining it like a carvery.
Just a bit sad about Lemmy, you know. Just getting over it with doing a podcast tonight.
Okay.
Questions. Chris says,
I've been doing some more little hardware upgrades to my Strat, considering some graphite saddles.
You can't do a stupid voice if you're going to mess it up. You're not allowed to do voices if you mess it up.
All right.
Chris says, been doing some little hardware upgrades to my Strat, considering some Graphtec saddles. Anyone tried them, Matt Knight?
Yes, I have. They're on a Strat I had about 8 years ago. So I can't comment what I've, to be honest, I don't remember them actually making anything sound any better. I just think they were slightly like, if you break a lot of strings, perhaps, yeah, there might be a decent upgrade. But I found the best upgrade was actually if you've got a Mexican Strat, they've got composite metal saddles. So just buy some stainless steel ones.
Yeah.
Because they are much, much better.
It's the Graphtec stuff is funny. I can kind of see like the point of the nut, because that's where strings kind of catch and pinch. Yeah. I tend not to find that with the saddles very much, and like just regular pressed steel saddles seem to be fine. Yeah. Like you're saying, unless you're having a major problem with breakage, I'm not sure that it's much of an upgrade.
If you're having tuning stability issues, then buy a roller nut. That I found that to be probably one of the best things you could do. That just makes everything stay in tune like really, really well.
Do you think
that and locking machine heads?
Do you think a roller nut over one of the regular Graphtec nuts?
Yeah, 100%. If you can fit it, it makes a huge difference.
Definitely. Have either of you guys tried them or tried guitars with them on?
No. I've tried some of the stuff with not the Graphtec. I don't think. I've tried the roller nut stuff.
Okay.
And I thought they were pretty good. They just look a little unwieldy.
That's the only thing, isn't it? They look
that
a bit
is the
naff.
Downside.
They do look very unwieldy. Another thing, if one of the things that you're worried about is the string breakages, try some different strings. Those MYXLs have proven very, very popular.
Yeah.
And they do appear to last a lot longer. I've only had a brief go with them, but they appear to be pretty rocking.
Definitely. Definitely. Andrew says, does anyone know the European release date for
if
the...
If you can't say these things properly, then I'm going to do them in silly voices.
Stop doing your silly voice.
Very good. I was awaiting that one. Thank you. Andrew says, does anyone know the European release date of the Line 6 Helix rack unit?
Yes.
Matt Knight.
I was just going to say they were supposed to be out at the same time as the floor units in like September.
Yeah. Any updates since then?
They were always due after the the floor units. But no, and I wouldn't. I could probably get a rough idea, but I wouldn't want to say. The only thing I would say is, from working in store, is that things like that are ridiculously back ordered through back orders. And the best thing to do is, if you want one, is put a deposit down, because guaranteed the first couple of shipments will probably all be.
They'll just be fulfilling
sold.
Orders.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I still haven't had a chance to have a proper go on one yet, so I've literally had 10 minutes with one. So,
what's the advantage of going for the rack unit over the floor unit?
I just think some people either want to integrate it into a studio, or maybe already have some other bits that they're going to integrate it with the live rig, or some people might have something like an ESA or something like that that you can then integrate multiple pedals into that as well, because it's full MIDI control, so you could obviously hook it up to some people might already use an Axe FX and then they want a Helix as well, and they're going to combine the two and they're using the floor controller.
It doesn't come
with a controller.
Do you get any more outputs or anything like that? Because it always used to be with the Line 6 stuff that the floor units didn't have any digital out and then the rack units had...
Do you know what? I don't know. As far as I'm aware, it's exactly the same unit.
Okay.
It's just the rack units are minus any touch buttons.
Sure.
And I suppose the advantage of the floor one for editing is obviously you've got the touch-sensitive metal buttons for editing, which is quite a cool feature, which you're not going to have on the Helix. So I'm assuming maybe the user interface... Well, actually, the user interface is the same, so I don't know if there's going to be some sort of computer editing that people are going to be able to do. Or if you're really good with MIDI editing, using a MIDI floor controller should be relatively easy.
I'd be very surprised if there wasn't some sort of like software interface that you could USB into your computer or whatever and... edit that way and just use it kind of like as the brain.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for that for the ESA. Imagine how good that would be, being able to edit all the patches.
Is that on its way?
Not as far as I'm aware. Unless there are some people on, there's like an ESA users group forum, and there's one guy on there who's like, I think I might give it a go and actually trying to program it.
We're going to get
see if
some,
I can actually do it.
Some bootleg, dirty bootleg OS territory.
If you know how to like program and write for SysX, then you probably can. But yeah.
Yes, you are. I'll just knock something up in SysX. Don't worry about it.
It's like we've mentioned it before, but those old Line 6 modules, and you could program your own if you knew how to program DSP code. Make your own digital effects with your digital DSP code.
It's open to everyone, ages 8 to 80. little Christmas present for your nan.
What happens if you're 81?
You can't. Anyone who is over 80 and knows DSP is shot on sight. It's it's a weird ruling, but, you know, the EU, what can I say? Steve says, you've talked about favourite guitars, the ones that got away, the ones that you should never have sold, but does anyone have not so fond memories of buying a complete dog? It's hard to buy a bad guitar these days, but I had a couple in the 90s. Jake Ross, what have you regretted buying?
I guess, you know,
we all know the answer.
Like, are we counting stuff from when you were like, you know, because when I was 15, I bought a 7-string.
Yeah, we were waiting for it.
And I mean, what was I thinking? I was never going to use that.
It an Ibanez?
Ibanez. It was the entry-level Ibanez one. And it's just, I don't know what I was thinking. I really don't know what I was thinking.
Well, wasn't it that Mark had talked you into buying it?
No, it wasn't. No, that was something else.
That was the Gretsch.
Yeah, it was the Gretsch when I wanted a telly. yeah.
It's a sign of a great salesman.
Yeah. Mm. Or just someone who just trusts their mate too much. That's what it does.
Yeah.
Fool me once. But yeah, I guess only that is the only thing that I really regret buying. There's been a lot of stuff that I've bought and sold, but nothing that I would say, oh God, why did I buy that? What a mug, apart from probably that 7-string. But I was 15 or 14. I was at secondary school, so I was probably 15 when I bought that. But, you know, there we go.
Joe Branton.
Not a lot. I think generally I've made good choices, but
you've had so many dogs.
Like what?
Let's see. How many BBs have you had?
Oh yeah, I've had lots of BBs. I mean, the only BB I'd have to call that was a complete dog was when I bought a water damaged 1979 BB 800.
God. this is the one you had fairly recently, right?
Yeah, yeah. It looked like at some point it had been used as an alternative to a hammer for something,
or more aptly a paddle.
Yes, yeah, it was good though. I loved that. I was like, this is gonna be amazing. I'm buying like a 70s guitar. It's Yamaha BBs that I'm really into. It's already relic'd, and I'd probably pay to get a relic job. So I was like, this is gonna be brilliant. It was atrocious. it basically didn't have a 14th fret on your D or G string.
Sweet.
Like, why had that fret nearly gone?
Some people love that note. They just love it.
I'd say that was pretty bad. But, I didn't lose any money on it. I sold it to Jimmy Faulkner.
Oh, nice. Someone that's, one of your mates.
Yeah, exactly.
Sweet, good. Good. Man Knight.
Apart from the regret of buying, obviously, the 70s telly and selling BSG, I don't think I actually regretted it because it was a hound. I think I regretted it because I sold something I shouldn't have sold.
God, the life of Matt Knight, regretting purchasing a 70s butterscotch telly.
Regretted it.
Yeah, but it's only regretting because I sold something I didn't want. So normally, in most situations, you'd be like, yeah, no, that was a good purchase. I can't think of a guitar that I've bought and gone, yeah, I shouldn't have bought that. An amp, I bought a Marshall AFD 100. It wasn't a dog, but I don't know why I bought it, because I was like, yeah, that's going to be great. And it was an all right sounding amp, but I never used it. I think I plugged it in once through a 212.
100 watt / voiced Marshall head for you essentially to use in your bedroom.
Yeah,
like.
For my Strat. Yeah, great. Sweet child of mine sounded awesome.
mine is I bought a 62 Jazz. not an actual one, a Japanese reissue.
Why, how could you regret that?
From
that,
the 90s.
The best.
It was one of the worst basses I've ever played.
Is this where your hatred for jazz basses come from?
No, it just wasn't very good. And it just in general, I think the jazz is a little underwhelming, and this was very underwhelming.
That is...
Didn't play very nicely. Sunburst.
Oh, so Sunburst with a tour guard.
Yeah.
Exactly what I'm playing at the moment.
Yeah, might even be the same one.
No, mine's not Japanese.
Is it not? Is yours Mexican?
Yeah, the Mexico, they did a limited edition tweed hard case, nitro version.
Sure. Oh, yeah, forgot you got that.
Yeah, this one was just best a bit... Base. It was the definition of just a bit of a dog. Just didn't... Nothing clicked with it. Not that good. The other two, I would say, are the... when I bought the Gibson Ripper.
Oh, yeah.
Just not very good.
Oh, yeah. You bought an old one.
Really heavy. 78. Really heavy. Didn't sound that good. Never really worked properly.
I quite liked the reissue.
Just
they
set
did
up really badly. Yeah, it was okay. It was okay. There wasn't really a standard reissue, was it? They changed a load of stuff.
No. Yeah.
And then the last one is that Rickenbacker 4000. Because although...
God, you've bought loads of stuff that you didn't like.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't regret buying that?
I do, because I then regret selling it and then not having it now. Even though I didn't like it as a bass.
Right.
I sort of wish that I'd never got involved with it. Because the whole thing, the whole ordeal was just arduous. Like, buying it, got posted through the letterbox, essentially, in a bin bag with no case. And then had to get in touch with the guy who posted it and said, you've posted this in a bin bag and it's basically like really damaged. And he said, yeah, sort of, I've just lost my job, so you can't really have any money back. And I was like, okay, I'll just need to put in a claim with eBay. And he said,
better sell some CDs then, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. he said, I'll just give you some money back. And then I felt guilty about that, and then I didn't like it, and then I sold it. The whole thing, I just wish I hadn't got involved. And then years later, seeing one in Guitar Center for like loads and loads of money, yeah, I just wish I'd not bothered. Upsetting. Let's do one more question, and then we'll do some more stuff in the Patreon episode. This one comes from Paul, who says, what's the Angry Charlie up against in terms of competition? Angry Charlie being the JHS drive pedal?
Yeah, the hot-rodded Marshall Plexi type thing.
What's the competition?
The Sir Riot Drive, actually, is probably the closest in competition. Very similar, sort of high-gain overdrive. Looks awesome. There's another one as well, and I think the exotic SL Drive, which is once again based on that sort of hot-rodded Marshall. But the advantage of that one is that you've got loads of different Marshall tones via a dip switch in like underneath.
Okay.
So you can get like a super bassman, not super bassman. What was that big? Was it not? I'm trying to think of that old Marshall now. Not bassman.
JTM,
something similar.
Blues Breaker.
JTM. Quite possibly. I can't for the life of me think what it is now. But yeah.
JMP.
There's the exotic. Maybe.
Fender? No, Marshall.
Oh right. Okay.
No, there was a Fender, a Marshall bass amp, and I can't think what it was called. I'm gonna have to look it up because it's gonna really annoy me. But yeah, the Exotic SL Drive and the Sir Riot Drive are the two closest things to the Angry Charlie. I still think the Angry Charlie sounds better, but a lot of people have had good success with the other two.
So it's Marshall, hot rodded Marshall in a box, basically.
Basically, yeah, they're all like hot rodded plexis.
Wampler do the Plextortion, I guess, is probably
I think the Plextortion doesn't have as much gain though.
Okay.
To me, the Angry Charlie and the SL Drive especially have like loads and loads of gain on tap, which is quite cool because it's really responsive to the volume control, but it's also the gain control on the actual pedal itself is really responsive. It goes from a really light sort of cranked Marshall-y drive to something like really full on, sort of like really like Van Halen-esque or something like that.
Okay.
Where the Plextortion covers the kind of big range of Marshall sounds, but I don't think it has as much gain in it.
Cool. Okay, well, so that is all the questions for this week. All submitted through the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. If you want to hear some more, we're going to answer some more over on the Patreon episode, as well as talking about the Guitar Nerds plans for 2016.
Got some
Ooh. Things happening and stuff, and you'll get a little sneak peek into the window of things. If you want to hear that, do head over to patreon.com/guitarnerds, where you can sign up from as little as $5 a month, and you'll get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds every week.
Sign up.
Indeed. And if you join the top level, you'll be one of our executive producers, like these people.
Phil Tomzett, Colin Anderson, Scott O'Brien, Moo Gravett, Fletch Fletcher, Matt Quine, Jack Conroy, Chris Wilson, Will Clare, Dale Rasko, Jack Godfrey, Paul Corrigan, Eric Seary.
That's almost too long for me to do in one breath now.
Well, I was about to say that we've limited the number of executive producers we can have, and there are only a few more spots available. And we're going to be doing some special stuff for the executive producers that we haven't talked about yet, but we're going to do some extra kind of special rewards, maybe like some sort of like live thing or some sort of video thing where people can join in, basically, and we can talk and send questions and things like that, some sort of live stream. We haven't worked out the details, but to find out about that, you need to be one of the top level backers. patreon.com/guitarnerds. You can also follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/guitarnerds, instagram.com/guitarnerds, on YouTube, Guitar Nerds videos. That's about it.
Any others?
I think that's it. I'm at Mark_random. Matt's Matt_nightsy. Jay's at JAYBM1. Joe's at Joseph_900.
Player.
I feel like we're a bit rusty.
Do you think?
I'm a bit rusty.
I think it feels. I was also going to say they did make Marshall did make a bass amp called the Super Bass or the Super Bass Lead.
Of course. If we'd been on our game, we would know about that. Give us a couple of episodes to get back into the 2016 thing.
We're all going to be. I think. Once NAMM is fully underway, I think last year
it's going to be so much to talk
about.
Weren't we
doing a podcast whilst they were announcing stuff at NAMM? Yeah. And we were just like, oh my God, this has been announced.
Yeah, we'll have to work out how that works this year because what we don't want to do is do a podcast the day before NAMM starts.
No.
Yeah. And then we don't know about anything. And then by the time we roll around to the next one.
Maybe we can do some, I don't know. I don't know.
We'll work something out. But what we will do is obviously there's going to be loads of content going up on the site, guitarnerds.net. I'll probably be doing a sort of NAMM video roundup in some way or another. And we'll have podcasts in and around the time that it's going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I spoke to Mothers this week as well.
Who?
I'm going to put up a little thing about their gear.
Mothers?
Well. Mothers. I really like Mothers. They're a really, really good little three piece.
With that, I think we should maybe call it an evening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.